Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Robots and Red Tape. As always, I am your host, Nick Schott. Happy to have my friend here, my friend Sam Hart here with me. Sam, how you doing this morning?
Hey, I'm doing great. How are you doing today, Nick?
Oh man, it's another day in paradise. Thanks so much for asking. Sam, first, I really appreciate you coming on Robots and Red Tape. If you don't mind, would you tell everybody that, all the listeners, a little bit about yourself, your background, and kind of why, how you got here?
No, absolutely. And thanks so much for inviting me on here. It's great to be on the pod and chat with you guys. So, but just a little bit about me. I started out, I was former military as a special operations pilot, did a whole bunch of different stuff. And then I got into, like many people do after their first career, consulting. So I was doing defense consulting and helped everyone from the Joint Chiefs of Staff to the Air Force, the Navy, to DARPA, doing a bunch of different strategy, but also acquisition projects. And so that led me to, at the end, working over in OSD's industrial policy and writing for the secretary. My team, we do research, present business cases, and be there at the intersection of business and national security, having our toes in both. And one of those was AI. So there I am. It's 10 p.m. I'm writing a report about AI, not being able to use AI. And I'm like, how can I make my team's life better? Like, this is terrible. Why can't we use an AI? Because all the research we were seeing was like, it slushes your data around. It's not secure. It's not private. It's not compliant. It doesn't even check the boxes necessarily. And that's too bad, right? Like, here's this great tool, it has a lot of opportunity, has a lot of risk. And so then we're like, hey, let's build something that people can actually use and be responsible and safe about it. So that's how we got here. That's how I started Hathor AI. And we're building secure, private, and HIPAA compliant AI tools for government and also for healthcare professionals.
Fantastic, man. And what really inspired your transition to first, go into tech consulting, and then second, why did you decide to go out on your own and start your own business as opposed to, joining somebody and being a part?
No, 100%. So I'd been a contractor for years, and I liked my old company. It's great. I really liked my government work I was doing. And still have a great relationship with everyone. And it was just one of those things where I was like, hey, I think I can give back in a different way. And I felt lucky. I felt a real privilege to be like one of probably about, 10 to 50 people who had access, but also kind of like that background to really see where this was going. And I was like, hey, how can I help? How can I serve in a different way? Like, people need this, to keep their data safe. You have nation state actors trying to steal data. You have people who don't really understand it becoming vendors. Like, hey, let's just do right by everybody. We can all win here.
Yeah, no, absolutely. No, 1,000%. That absolutely, if you want to ensure that, you're doing things right, you're keeping your customers' best interests at heart. I totally get why you would decide to go out on your own as opposed to joining one of these larger AI companies that may or may not have their clients' best interest at heart. I'm not quite sure. I think that depends person by person and company by company, though,
Yeah, no, 100%.
And so how, as we start thinking about, some of the compliant and safe AIs that, AI systems that we have out there, can you first, kind of explain to everybody how generative AI is not just ch not changing, human and machine interaction, but machine and machine interaction?
Totally. So, like, just a quick breakdown of what like a large language model is. It's just like really fancy predictive math for what the next letter is going to be in a word. So it's like, I think people are like, oh, it's a Terminator. Oh, it's gonna kill everybody. I'm like, no, it's really fancy math. And now the first generation of these large language models was being able to synthesize all the data that had been scraped from the internet and to help predict what was going to be the best fit for the question you asked. Now, this next generation is really cool because it's also working with what's called agentic AI. And that's just a fancy term with it can click around on your computer too now, based on what you tell it to do, right? So I love it. People start bit throwing around these words, and VCs will be like, oh yeah, agentic AI and blah blah blah, AGI, whatever. It's like throw all the word soup, and it's like, the first one is, hey, here's a way to talk to a computer just like you're talking to your cousin. And then the other one is giving computers tools to talk to each other in an unstructured format. So it's cool to see how machines now can start doing unstructured tasks just like humans, right? Because before you'd be like, you'd have to write a script, you'd have to have the data prepared perfectly. And of course, all those things help with these workflows. But now we're getting into the realm where you can have these tools doing human-like tasks. Now they don't have, necessarily have the critical thinking there where it's just fancy math, but you can also have them do that at scale. So you're starting to have machines where they could make tasks infinitely scalable. Now they're making actions. So that next higher level, a series of tasks, infinitely more scalable.
And so, can you give a real world example of how this is different and and groundbreaking and changing? So, because I think a lot of people, while many folks understand what you mean, but don't, can you define that and also define, like, why is it a big deal that unstructured tasks are now becoming a, it's becoming a reality that, AI can do those as opposed to structured? Like, can you, break that down and kind of bring it into real world for folks.
100%. So, like, I'll give you two examples. One is something that we're interacting with. So, one of those is like, how can you build an app with or a HIPAA compliant app to interact or grab different data on the internet? And so, like, for instance, someone is building like a web for app with Hathor AI, or also a hospital is looking at building some stuff with Hathor AI where they need to grab information from other websites and integrate that into the patient data, but it has to be done within a secure environment. Where before they'd have to hire someone at like 120K a year, they get sick to do the same kind of tasks. Now, the other one is kind of cool too, and it's kind of adjacent, but it's like I saw it, was for grant, right? Not grant, it was for patent applications. And so, like, hey, are you going to get the API to the USPTO office? Like, probably not. Patent trademark office. Like, probably they're not going to just hand that out willy-nilly. But you can build these AI agents where, and there's a service being advertised where you can go. You can have the agent collect your information and have it fill out your stuff on the website, where before you'd have to pay someone to fill in the information to generate out, where a computer now can click around on a website and fill it out, and it's making those not just one task, but the entire thing possible now.
And previously, if you wanted the computer to fill that out, you'd have to give it all of the answers, right? Specifically structured out, and then say, all right, just go load this into the website. But that's not the hard part. The hard part is collecting all the information and categorizing it, putting it in. So you can just say, hey, go fill this out, and it'll read your information and it'll properly put it in, probably.
A 100%, and it's just making that whole thing scalable,
Absolutely. No, 100%. That's really, really, really cool. And then why, what allows these machines to do that? Is it just the next level of math? Is it just more fancy math? Fancier
it's
math.
a fancier math. It's a fancier math, but it's also how they're designing it to be able to interact with the world. Because before it's like, why would you even do that? You have to get the API, aka you have to get the connection. You have to connect it just right and connect it, the 360 degrees of 300 million connections, whatever. And it just, a lot of times, just didn't make sense.
Yeah, is
But
this
now it's, yeah,
yeah
now
this is,
it's,
go ahead.
hop on. Yeah,
No,
so it's interesting to see all the major guys starting to do this.
yeah, and I mean, I think, like, immediately what I think about is, I mean, obviously there's more of them, but you think about it, like a Zapier, who's built their whole business on being that common API, right? So instead of having to connect your, your two services specifically to each other, right? And like a great example is I use Nutshell, I mean, I use a CRM, right? And I use Zapier to essentially make sure that all the right information is moving from my website and from other places into my CRM. But so you say essentially I won't need to do it that way. I can just put an AI agent in there. Do you think that, like, is that a existential threat to somebody like a Zapier's business?
I don't think so, just because Zapier has enough traction now that they'll, keep pushing, right? The snowball only gets bigger. I think one thing that'll be interesting to see about AI, I know people are talking about, oh, disruption, disruption. I'm like, no, I think there's a chance for the big guys to get even more entrenched. Because Zapier is like, wait, now we can suck up and translate this data even faster and cheaper for our clients. Like, Boom, it's even easier now. It's like, hey, just put in the website, versus like having to hire a developer to appropriately plug in the thing. So I think it may actually make some of these big guys even more entrenched if they're wise about it. Now, if you're some of these companies that don't see the power of AI and you're a little too skittish about it and you don't read the risk and the opportunity appropriately, I think those are the ones that are going to get disrupted real fast. But I think Zapier actually is really interesting how they're already integrating Gen AI.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense that they would. They're going to take all of that and make it easier for their end clients to integrate, so that, like, I paid somebody to set all my integrations up because I was sure, not even sure that I was going to mess it up. It's that it's just not the best use of my time, right? It's not. I'd rather pay somebody for it, but it'll be really interesting to see.
Totally. I think another interesting thing too about Gen AI, like talking about it. So I talked about my background, a little bit. I did ISR and targeting. And so part of that was, hey, like seeing how people interact with the world. And I think people underestimate one, why AI is so cheap right now for the big tech companies. And it's because when you stare into that void, the void is staring back at you. So I give this example, like, so I use ChatGPT. I use Claude. Like, you need to be smart on all these different things, and they're all useful tools, right? For the right things. I definitely don't use any proprietary or any controlled data in them. But as a thought process, I was like, hey, I put in a bunch of stuff for Hather. I asked a bunch of questions, had it run the thing a bunch of times. And in my account, I was like, hey, tell me about the best HIPAA compliant AI tools. And at the top was like, Hather AI. And then it was like, Google, blah, 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 blah. I'm like, that's a lie. Like, I'm not eclipsing Microsoft or Google. Like, that would be awesome. I'll put it on my CV, get a trophy one day. But no, let's be real. I went to the open source one, and of course, it didn't list me at the top,
Of
right?
course.
The one you don't have to log in. And so I caution people to be like, hey, these big platforms are sucking up your data aggressively, no matter how private they tell you you are, because you can't run a business for $15 to $20, $15 to $30 a person and have it be private. You just can't. And so they're monetizing your data. It also puts you in an ecosystem or an echo chamber that's not healthy or productive for your business too. So it hits you a few different ways. So sorry, that was a kind of a long tangent, but something I always tell people to kind of think about. And I hope they think about also in their machine to machine context as well.
Yeah, so you so and I mean I personally pay for chat I pay for licenses for ChatGPT because they say that they don't train on your data, even if that is whether it's true or not, right? And
Totally.
I don't know, and we just kind of have to take their word for it that they're not training the model on our data. I also think that, like, obviously that's not where they're going to make all of their money. I think that they're going to make a lot of their money doing B2B work, right? Or B2G work, where they're essentially the underlying model that's getting, that's being put, where their answers are getting pulled from, but you're not going to see that skin, right? Like, and I know you've seen it on like LinkedIn and other social media sites, or where it's, hey, just enter your information here and tap it, and then I mean, you don't see that it's calling from ChatGPT or Claude or whatever, but it's pulling it from the back end. I think that that's where their main economic motivator is going to be.
Totally. It's definitely the taste part. The first one I was telling you about where I had to sign in, that was a paid account too. So it's a wink and a nod. It makes me think about it's such a great story that's indicative of big tech and how they treat your data. But Google in incognito mode, they came out, they're like, no, they're just measuring you from another portion of it
Oh, of course.
that you signed up for, that you agreed
Yes.
to. So it's
Yeah.
like they have to monetize your data.
Oh,
But
1,000%. That's why Gmail is free and all the email services are free. People aren't paying for them, right? I mean, I pay for most of my life runs off of business accounts because I pay for those, but I still assume that they're selling our data somewhere. And I always thought it was really funny that I've read and I've seen that in lawsuits where Google's offering to settle, part of their settlement is they will offer to delete the incognito search data that they have on you.
Yeah, I know, right? And you're just like, oh, come on, guys. But I always laugh about that too, where people trust it. I'm like, hey, like the internet is a leaky sieve. And I tell people, I'm like, there's no such thing as totally walled off. Now, have their AI runs in a standalone service. So we do it in AWS. So we have one thing where it anonymizes it, and then on another one, of course, running it through like a series of different private VPCs and different private servers. So it goes through a series of different things to anonymize and keep it private and keep it in a standalone environment. And we also charge appropriately for that because you have to, right? So if you're
1,000.
not paying for it, what's the maximum? If you're not paying for it, you're the product.
Yeah, no, 1,000%. And that's why, Facebook is such a wealthy company because they sell our information. And, you and I don't pay for, a Facebook or an Instagram account at all. I've never given Facebook money directly. But I know that they've made a lot of money off of selling my data over the years, right? That's why you mentioned something about like, oh yeah, you're gonna go buy something, then all of a sudden you see all these ads following you all over. That's 1,000% selling your data. And then you get added to other companies' queues and their marketing and outreach. And I am sure that I've spent a lot of money over the years because of that, whether or not I wanted to buy those specific products, but prior to seeing the ads, right?
Totally. I think like one of the most underappreciated inventions of the 21st century was the Facebook Pixel, because it's so easy to integrate literally anywhere on the internet, compare it to even Google or whatever. It's like, oh, the amount of data that they scrape is truly wild. But yeah, no, totally. It's curious.
So, what are some of the long-term possible impacts to legacy infrastructure and legacy data systems?
Totally. So I always laugh. Like, there's a person, he's an NYU professor. His name is Scott Galloway. And he talks about like businesses that he's thought about in the past. And he's like, hey, if it's boring, ka-ching. And so I laugh about that because also from the national security side, the United States hasn't done a great investment in our infrastructure really since the end of World War II. So we have all these legacy machines and platforms. And I also include, so everything from your dams, I also include, your lathes. So all your massive means of production. So whether it's for, creating sheet metal, whether it's for building bridges, whether it is the bridge itself, like all that kind of goes in. So being able to find and collect that data, now you have sensors, one that can measure a whole lot of different things. Now we have the transmission capability, so you have Bluetooth that can do high enough data transfer, and now you have the tools that can make sense and change them as you need to. So I think machine to machine on the most boring end, machine to machine communication and redesign of these systems, even if you're using the same parts, now you can put a system on top. Now you can have it run at different times. Now you can monitor. And like I was saying earlier about not just like individual task management, but process management that had to be done by a human. Now you can start doing that at scale and you can start optimizing your data to be reused. So collect it, transmit it, and then process it, and then use it. So now we're creating that entire chain that can be done in an unstructured manner, which I think is going to be absolutely massive for like hard physical stuff. Now, the other part of it too is like what I was talking about. You brought up Zapier. Like, what a great example of like, hey, you have this business built on connecting everyone's API, kind of like the train conductor. Now you can automate a lot of the train conducting to an even crazier level and connect things faster and make use of that data. So I think giving machines the ability to analyze, process, and optimize their data, like I have no idea the level of stuff that's going to happen in 5 years. But I'm not one of those people who think there's going to be Terminators in 5 years. I think it'll probably be like a 30% increase per year, which is also an insane productivity improvement.
It is. Yeah, no, it absolutely is. And I'm also with you. I think what, like, I don't know how far out these systems would have to advance to be able to do like the Terminator stuff where they take over everything and lock people out and all. Like, I don't know. What I do know is, what I do know is we're nowhere near there yet from a technology perspective, both on like machines thinking that way, but also like there's the robotic side that people always forget about, where it's like,
Yes.
like they're not mobile.
Well, that's a cool thing too. It's like now that we have vision being able to incorporate or to be incorporated in these workflows, there's a whole lot of stuff that came out of like the Uber studios were like out of Carnegie Mellon and then poached by Uber up in
Mm-hmm.
the Pittsburgh area, especially on self-driving cars. And just like you're saying, I mean, it's amazing what you can do now with these models that help you deal with unstructured data, just like the world, which is unstructured.
Yeah, absolutely. No, 1,000%. Nothing structured, truthfully, until we organize it. But you know, yeah, and how you know, I think you touched on this a little bit, but how does that make like compute such a vital resource and such a centralized resource?
So I think it is so curious. Again, I talked about data collection, right? You stare into the GPT is staring back at you. But I mean, it's really cool to think about infrastructure. I mentioned, like boring ka-ching. I think the big tech providers realize the same thing. They're like, one, we need data. That's absolutely a valuable resource, just like lithium mines, just like anything else, data and high quality data. And then also the compute to process that. So it's also like, well, who's buying all the chips? You have these huge data storage places. You're like, who has enough money to buy the insane amount of NVIDIA GeForce 4060s or whatever, is put out there to process? And the answer is like, you have to do that in centralized cloud provider. Otherwise, you just don't have the balance sheet to support it. And so I think it's interesting to see essentially you have the big four compute providers, so Oracle, Amazon, Google, Microsoft. Oracle's trying their hardest. So you have the four, and you have only four providers for a utility, critical infrastructure for the United States and also beyond. So it's interesting to think about like the government doesn't sign that for electricity. That would be insane. You ask them, be like, hey, can you do this for a local utility? They're like, no, we'll do multi-state, but like, no way in heck are we going to do centralize this across three, four separate providers. But that's essentially where we're at, which is kind of fascinating to see it develop. So compute, but also they want your data to
Of
see at
course.
both ends of the spectrum.
Yeah, no, and you know, I think I read that earlier this year, maybe, that Meta bought like 3 months of NVIDIA's production, just 3 months of it outright, right? They bought
That's
like a
wild.
Yeah, they bought like a huge amount of chips, right? Which is one reason why NVIDIA's like stock has been on the rise like crazy over the last couple of years. I wish I bought in like 10 years ago, but
I
it
know,
is what it
right?
is.
Killed myself.
Yeah, man, it's wild,
Yeah.
but
Well, I mean, who would have thought that, like, hey, this gaming graphics card company, yeah, I should invest in them to power the world's infrastructure. Like, what? No, it just feels crazy.
It does. No, it does. And then, you know, and yeah, it is crazy, and it's fascinating to see what's going to end up happening and where we're going to go with this, because you're right. There's also very few people that can make chips at that level and make them at scale. And I think that, you know, I think that the current or the out excuse me, the outgoing administration did a good job recognizing that we need to bring that production back here in this country. And I think that the infrastructure bill that was passed has a lot associated with, you know, ensuring that there are more chip factories built here in the US, which is a, you know, I think is a great thing. You know, and so yeah, you know, because this again, supply chain is way too exposed. They're too far away. They're produced too far away. But then we also don't have the workforce in this country to actually go about making them if something ever happens to the supply chain. And so when you start looking at things that are, to your point, critical infrastructure, right? Because I think chip manufacturing is absolutely critical infrastructure, as we continue to accelerate the need for more high-end chips. So, you know, how I think that was a lot of foresight and will pay dividends in the future.
Yeah, it'll be curious to see. I know everyone's like, what is it not happening next year? And I'm like, a fab like that takes like $6 billion in about 5 years to build. Like, it just takes time. It will be obsolete by the time it comes online, and that's okay. Like, that's just what it is. You have to start somewhere. This is a 30-year investment that starts now, just like you said. And you know what the other funny thing is? It's like, it doesn't. Not all the chips are made the same or need to be the same. So it's one of those two. It's like when people are like crying, it's like, oh, it's not 3 nanometers. You're like, that's okay.
Right.
Like the bulk, there are a range of different nanometers and requirements for a range of different products. Like
Correct.
there's so much variation in the market that is needed. 100%. Anyway, I just thought that was a good point you brought up, man.
I appreciate that, man. I appreciate that, Sam. No, and I also think that yes, these high performance chips are absolutely vital, but then, to your point, like I don't need one of them in I don't need one of them in my in my thermostat, right? Or in my car, or like there's a lot of there's and you know, I mean, like there's a lot of variation that goes into market need, market demand. And I forget the company. Is it TSMC? I only know them by stock tickers.
Well, it's good because TSMC, that's what everyone knows it is anyway, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I think I just read that they just did a first, they did their first dry production run of and produced chips at their massive plant in Arizona that they've been building for a couple of years, right?
Nice.
So, I don't think that they were like real chips, but they were doing production, like, test runs as they spin this machinery up. Things like that absolutely take time. You don't build an incredibly complex machine like that overnight to create, like that's not something that happens, but and it's going to take time. There's going to be setbacks, there's going to be production failures, right? I mean, a great example of that is, I mean, look at Tesla's production over the last 10 years and how they've been able to do a better job of producing cars because they have more experience. They understand where things break in the process, what's hurting the process. They're able to go in and create fixes, and then those fixes create more problems, and they go in and do that, and they continue to refine that process over time. And now you see them everywhere, right? Like they're like I can't drive without seeing five or six of them.
Dude, 100%. Yeah, if you're not getting better, like if you ever plateau, like that's what should freak you out. Like that, yeah,
1,000%.
no, I appreciate that.
Yeah, man.
That's
No, it's fat. And so having like laid a lot of this groundwork, man, how do you see a lot of this changing, the government, and their operations, whether it's in defense, civilian, or both? But I'd assume with your background in defense, you'd be more, ready to talk about that.
totally. I mean, like AI has been a part of defense products for a long time. I always want to quell that, right? Because it's like I remember running, like having sensor brawl on the plane, like these new upgrades would come and the thing to be able to lock on to something that was moving around, to help improve the sensor, like that's AI, that's ML, and so and that was like way back in like the 2010s, like 20s. And so it's like that's one part of it. Now I think the important part is technological advantage is always important. Like the government is, and also the government has its own priorities, right? And so it's fundamentally, what is it? We the people, by the people. And so it's like government is people. Like they have a lot of processes that like get hidden behind, but fundamentally it's about people interacting and taking care of other people. And so I think the government like had some different ways they went. So in 2022, November, ChatGPT comes out. 2023, this is when I was still working in OSD. 2023, a lot of some agencies pick up private quote, big air quotes, private GPT and or these other products by these vendors, like these small vendors, repackaging GPT, and they shut it down real fast after they realized they're falling. The rest of 2023, they kind of chilled out. Then 2024, they're like, hey, we need to figure this out. We need to start adopting it, and it starts going through. So you see winners, losers. The tricky part about it, though, is I think it will be curious to see how they integrate that. So there's one, there's the upside, of the like Shield AI is a really cool company, what they've been able to do. Again, like it's not just a task, it's not like a better firing solution. It's being able to manage a group of drones at scale to provide an effect on the battlefield versus like, hey, you need to track this one person like on that sensor ball. It's like, no, control the swarm of drones to provide a firing solution in this area and learn from each other. So that's one side, huge benefits.
Oh,
I
yeah,
think
man.
also on the administration of people and the processes that the government needs to take care of, I think that is huge. And I think even more. And the Trump administration has said they don't want to expand federal workforce, the federal workforce. So, but Congress, of course, signs into law things that need to be done. And so either those mandates either need to be pared down or a reduced workforce needs to accomplish them in X amount of time. Because it's the law and you follow the law, and that's just what we do here in the US, right? So using AI to do that is also, that'll be an interesting way to see how agencies and or departments and agencies tackle those requirements, those congressional requirements, with technology or a range of different solutions, but AI is a new one. We actually were working with the Department of Energy, and looking at working with USDA and some other ones too, including the DoD, to help them with that. You accomplish these tasks that always grow. The world is always growing and changing.
Yeah, man. No, and I think a lot of what my understanding of specifically, we'll talk acquisitions, 'cause acquisition process, because that's where you were, as a lot of these CEOs and cores are moving opportunities from a source's saw to a RFI to a RFQ to a RFP and moving through that process. Although one of the complaints I've always heard is that they have to enter the same information into this into the different systems over and over and over and over again to move it along, right?
It's terrible, those poor people.
And a lot of that has to do with the fact that those systems are antiquated and they don't talk to each other, right? And can't have it move, you can't have it automatically move the 96 pages over so you can, add your one page of changes, right? They have to move it all over manually. And I think, some stuff that you talked about from like a machine to machine perspective really would empower them to not have to do so much manual data entry. And I think that's absolutely an area that's ripe for I hate to say disruption, but it's ripe for some some reevaluation, right? And some re-engineering. And I think that things like this, where you can have the machine move, essentially have the algorithm move the data from point A to point B, and you don't have to connect them directly in a perfect way. You can just tell it, hey, I need you to move this over and create this change. It'll do that without an issue, which is really cool. And also, as you think about how many solicitations do you think the federal government puts out on an annual basis,
Oh
right?
my God, it's so many. I don't even know the number. It's insane. What did you know?
No, it's tens of thousands, maybe hundreds of maybe over a million. It's
I don't know.
huge.
Yeah.
It's
And
gargantuan.
insane.
It's ridiculous. And I mean, but as you think about imagine if you could save them all 2 hours a week, all the CEOs and cores, 2, 3, 4, 5 hours a week, make them 50, 30 to 50% more effective at their job. And now you think about something that I'm sure you've heard of and thought of been thinking about, but the brain drain within the acquisition workforce, right? And how there's a massive shortage of CEOs and cores. And as a result, that's the effect that that's having on industry is a lot of these smaller business opportunities are getting put together to be larger small business opportunities to reduce the work to reduce the burden on the acquisition workforce overall. Well, if we could, and I think as a result that also leads to more protests, right? There's less opportunities, but they're larger. And then as you start looking at how could this directly affect people is if you make the CEOs and cores better, then you're going to make the opportunities are going to be they're first they're going to come out faster, they're going to be evaluated faster, they're going to be awarded faster, and then there's going to be less protests because there's going to be less boxes that weren't checked as a result of that, which means that which means that it's going to be done right. Like I'm sure you saw like T4NG2 has had so many problems with award and protests that I think the government is having to reevaluate every single proposal that came in under new criteria. And this was awarded a year ago, over a year ago. And they've just been in protest. And then as a result, the government has less vehicles and less tools to go about, putting work out and awarding work. So they're having to do other things. It snowballs, right? And it snowballs.
Dude, it's brutal. And I it's like just going back to like the thing, it's like CEOs and acquisition, like their lives are hard. Like for 3 months running up, they just get like their stuff pushed in. And you're like, man, that sucks. And you're like, hey, and you're like, why are you doing this? They're like, well, I'm a patriot. I think it's interesting work, blah, blah, blah. But man, is it hard? And you're like, wow, yeah, like I get it. like, okay, how do we make your life easier? Because like, if you're really good, you know, a lot of those people go to industry and become pricing or contract officer advise on capture, and I get it, like 100%.
Yeah, man.
So I mean, yeah, a lot of these tools, I hope the government moves quickly enough to realize. I also hope that they realize that they should not be giving contracts to a single vendor, especially for AI engines. And I say that because, like, right now, I mean, you see the stranglehold of Microsoft, even them getting like disbarred, some of their services kicked off of FedRAMP certification. You're like, oh, and you're like, why are you still with them? And it's like, well, they cut these contracts like 30 years ago, they'll never get off of them. And it's like, well, how are we going to make people's lives better if we don't give ourselves more options in the acquisition process? And then you go down one level, like, how do we incentivize our acquisition and contracting officers to make those choices beforehand? And it's like, well, what kind of tools do they have to make to build themselves the time and energy and give them the tools to analyze this? And it's just like, hey, let's not give them that and hope for a better outcome. I'm like, that's literally definition of insanity. Like, let's make people's lives better so they can make better choices.
1,000%. And then, I mean, but like, to your point about, the Microsoft's being a behemoth, right? What's the government going to do? Migrate all of their email off of Outlook, right? Are they gonna stop using Microsoft Office and not you? They have Teams, has like my Teams Office, like Teams Word, Excel, PowerPoint, such a stranglehold, right? But I don't know how you would even begin to attack something like that. Like, and I don't understand. Also, why? What motivation would the government have to change that when like Excel's been the industry standard for 40 years? You know what I
And
mean?
we oh 100%. If Excel ever goes away, I will also shed many tears and cry. I remember laughing and it's like, yeah, this entire like joint operations center is just run on Excel 90, you know, Excel 2003. But the you know, I think it's interesting to see start seeing Google making their way, pushing it. So, you know, they got their FedRAMP High certification, you know, they can operate on all the different services. They have you know, Gmail now that you can, you know, have it host CUI data. And I'm like, ooh, that's exciting. 'Cause no one, I don't think many people actually like Outlook. It's just so infuriating.
It is. And I use Outlook in one of my businesses, and I use Gmail and all the other ones. And I'll say the one thing that I love about Gmail over all the other email services I've tried, and it makes complete sense, is their internal email search is the best, right? It's absolutely, and it makes sense that it is because that's their business, right? That's their core business. But like, if you're like me and have had the same email account for 10 years and you're trying to find a very specific email from 7 years ago, you know who sent it and about when it was sent, it's so like the search functionality is so much better as opposed to, when you contrast it with other, like Outlook or any of the other ones out there.
Dude, 100%. And it is funny to see though, like the different like pipelines and incentives that are created to push people to. Like I'm with you. We use Google Workspace so it can handle, you know, the different types of CUI or whatever. But you know, for those federal emails, like Microsoft makes it hard from a non-Microsoft account to send it to a Microsoft account. So I literally bought another domain so I could have 365 added. And you're like, this is gross. Like, what? Like, federal government. I know they don't know, but like, by default, it's, you know, ensuring this. So I just hope that they, you know, if you buy one rose, it looks like shit. You build a bouquet, you know, it's a healthier thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And so how, man, how can you how can we balance human expertise with AI to try to ensure that we're avoiding over-reliance on these technologies? And I mean, that's something that I personally really worry about, and I've mentioned it to you before. Deploying AI in some of my environments where it's my concern is that people are going to just use it and not actually read the output and things like that.
Well, yeah, that's right. And it's like you get these people because the AI is only good if you're already a high performer, or it might bring like a low performer up, but then you're at higher risk for hallucinations and everything. I'm curious to see where it goes, because I think citations are one part, but that's just if you don't have the critical thinking to even go look at the citations, you're like, oh, that looks wrong. It's just like a web search. You know, you're like, yeah, the first 10 things might just be conspiracy theories.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, I think I'm a huge proponent of a classic education, you know, the critical thinking, dig into stuff. And I think you can get that a lot of different ways, but I think having, I don't know is the answer. I have no idea. I just know that we are at risk of being over-reliant. I also want to like put a fine point on that too, because I know like I remember hearing people like who was it? It was Plato or Socrates be like, ah, people writing stuff down, their minds will atrophy and turn to mush. Look at these people. My students now being able to use a tablet. Ugh, nothing good will ever come of that. And that, you know, of course, but there's definitely something to be said about what you said. When I think I was telling you the other day about that study where it was like the ability for employees on average to generate new content like went down, you know, because AI is just a regression to the mean because it is just fancy math.
No, and I think that while many people, how do I'm not going to delicately put this, Sam. I think that
Go for it.
if we're counting on people and people's critical ability to think critically as a check on this, we're fucked. Pardon my language, but like we just fucked. One of my favorite jokes the like of all time is it was George Carlin. He said, think about how stupid the average person is. Half of them are dumber than that, right? That's how it works. And the funny thing that I think is really funny is that he even had to dumb that joke down to so people would understand, because the average person doesn't understand the difference between an average and a median, right? Because it's not the like the average. No, it's the median is the proper term. And so when you like, I don't have a lot of faith in people's intelligence reigning. And I think that systems need to like winning the day. I think that we need to set up and build systems and build them in a way that enforces and ensure forces people to it forces the workflow, right? Is really where it is. You have to force people to and to use it to ensure that they can't skip that step. Because I mean, listen, I mean I've been sitting in hiring for a long time as one of my businesses, and I can't tell you how many resumes I've seen over the last year and a half where people clearly threw it into through either threw their resume into ChatGPT and told it to make it better, or just threw a job description in and had it add a job. And you have any idea how many times I've seen the little bracket at like it, it's right. It's talking about something they do. And there's the brackets that
Oh
say,
no.
add numbers here, add statistics here, add measurable. And like, they just don't read that. Right. And I think that I also think that we're, moving out of the early adopter stage of this technology in real time into, into the next, like, the next step, in that process of adoption, right? That's the early middle adoption where we have a lot more people getting into it and starting to use it. And I think that as this the number of people that starts to that use it more increases, the number of people that do that will trust it implicitly is going to increase. Right, and not read the output. And that's where I get very concerned, especially when you start talking about things that require HIPAA compliance, right? But not just HIPAA compliance, that things that require you to to write write outputs and create things that can be audited later. Like I have serious concerns about people and whether or not they're actually going to use the tool the way it's supposed to be, or use it to replace a function of a piece of their job they either don't like or don't think they're very good at.
Totally. I mean, I think you bring up a really good point, and it's like the I'd be curious just, you know, if I could expand my consciousness. I wonder how many people that misspelled or just used ChatGPT to submit their application, how many of them would have had a better application, you know what I mean? Had it been handwritten. Like obviously you'd suspect, like I think the thing about AI too is like the mouth breathers are still gonna be mouth breathers. But I think if you can use it intelligently, I think that the disparity is going to just accelerate. You know, like if you're a low quality knowledge worker, I think that's just, it's going to be really tricky when you have people who have more horsepower, drive, insert whatever, like gives them a warning cop, like a winning combination, they can amplify their capability. I had a chat with this company. They had, 30,000 providers in this healthcare environment, and they're like chatting. It's like, I want to use our AI to amplify the provider, amplify these people to get them out there. Because, like you said, not everyone is built the same, and some people struggle with maybe a different part. They might be an award-winning PhD, but maybe this part of their process and that they have to do currently, they just are bad at. And so it's like, hey, like you said, like, hey, let's get people who are really good at that and can automate the thing that people are bad at. Let's see how much of that we can automate now. And I think that's going to be really helpful. So we can avoid the person who's like making a bad thing. My analogy there would be like, hey, build a front end so that you can have someone put in their information, put in the job they're doing, and having like a user interface to make it so the probability of their success increases and the quality of product increases.
Yeah, absolutely. And I hope we can. And I think to your point, it absolutely will for a lot of folks, but I think that it won't for others, right? Because I think that, some people just are, some people spend a lot of time, effort, and energy not being good at their job. And you for a lot of reasons, right? And
No, there's a lot.
and so what are some of the big, biggest challenges for AI as it relates to HIPAA compliance?
I think some of the big things are actually very similar and also very different, and I'll go into both like very shortly. But I think one of the biggest things like that's similar to everything else that are like your regular SharePoint site is like, hey, like who has access to the data and who can see this data? I think that's like fundamentally the big question around HIPAA compliance. The intent is to protect people's PHI and PII. And so I think where it becomes more spicy with AI is most providers, your commercial providers, one, they want your data. And I give the analogy of a pool. If you take a glass of water and you dump it in the pool, y'all aren't going to be able to get the same glass of water no matter how many times you dip it in. That data is gone and it is reusable by the rest of humanity on that platform. Yikes. Violation, boom. And I also think you have these providers that I think one of the tricky things about this too is it's not very clear necessarily how their data is controlled. Like ours at Hather, we say like very explicitly, like, and we can show you like this is explicitly how we hold your data. This is where it is stored. This is the location that it's stored in. It does not leave this location. Where like other providers are like, I don't know, it's somewhere on this server that might be in Malaysia. And you're like, ooh, that's not cool. So I think it's access is really tricky because before you used to be able to control it at a lot algorithm, now it's at an exponential level of who can access that data because it's thrown the common pool, and now also how rapidly you can access it. So of course, now anyone can query that pool of data if you don't have appropriate safeguards. So if you're just running on these enterprise systems, the government, the DoD actually got in trouble with that in 2023, where I won't go into it, but long story short, all the data that was supposed to be for specific people, just like HIPAA, was being accessed by whomever knew who to look for, which is not okay. Yeah, so I think those are two different things, but AI is at a whole nother level, and people need to know to ask that question of how do you segregate, how do you segment, how do you protect my data, and then do you reuse it? Because everyone else pretty much reuses it. We don't. We had investors be like, "Are you sure that's a good business case?" I'm like, "No, it's not about business. It's about doing the right thing and also just complying with the law. That's
Absolutely.
what we're gonna do."
No, absolutely. And I think that it's interesting as somebody who runs a small provider, right? I just trust my EHR that it's gonna do things right. Because they advertise that they're HIPAA compliant and we have a BAA in place with them, and so we're good, and then we're protected by that. And then they obviously don't have their own data center, right? I think they probably run on like either probably on AWS, or Microsoft, or Azure, or maybe GCP, but Like that's, that's a maybe, right? It's Azure and AWS are the two big ones out there. And so no idea what they do with the data. No, I don't know how, I no idea where it sits, where it lives, other than people that we're supposed to be covered from a liability perspective. So it's, and I think that it'll be interesting to see how a lot of this plays out from an infrastructure perspective as it relates to this. Because people like these things are very, very data hungry. And if I'm sure you've I also know that I have personally been able to pull information off of websites that wasn't supposed to be forward facing, but was there still when you tell when you know how to tell Google, you tell Google how to look for it, right? And and where to look and how to go about it. And I was very excited thinking I was a hacker because I was Google hacking, right? When in reality I was scraping the internet, right? It's like, no, it's like you're just like you're doing it like a little bit more advanced than other people. It's fascinating though, and it'll be interesting to see how where we go. I also think that things like folks like like these large healthcare companies, whether it's a health insurance company or a telehealth provider, selling their web traffic and people looking at their web traffic and being able to deduce who's a patient based on data of website accessibility and things like that. And I would like that should be covered under HIPAA, but I don't think it is.
I don't think so either. That's fascinating. Yeah, because it'd be like walking past a, I think in their minds, it's like walking past a doctor's office. Like, who looked inside? And we're like, man, I don't know. You can do whatever you want. They're still on the street. But yeah, it's fascinating. That's a good point, though, too. It's like thinking about, like, hey, well, how do you get access to care? Who do you decide gets access to care? Yada, yada, yada. I'm not saying right or wrong or sideways, but it's definitely, you now have data that you didn't have before. I'd be
Absolutely.
curious.
Yeah,
I
very.
hadn't thought about that.
And what man, what are some of the overlooked, security risks that people aren't thinking about or talking about as it relates to this specifically?
I'd say one, the basics. So like one, I remember there's some crazy stat. It was like 30% of like the workforce is using like an unapproved AI model. So it's just dumping your company's proprietary stuff. So into the wider market and people are like, ah, who cares? It's not, it's like we're just a little company or whatever. I'm like, you used to be able to hide in the weeds. You are not. Like, we had one client, they were an OEM or a secondary OEM supplier of automotive parts and also like tire inflation cages, for like large semi. And one of the things that they're really good at is like really optimizing their warehouse setup. And so that's something that they had on a private site and part of their proposals to them. Anyway, not on the web. Not on the web anywhere. Well, they put that in, ChatGPT when he was young. He was an early adopter guy. Loved it. And then he found the schematic on his competitor's website like 2 weeks later. And you're like, oh. So it's not HIPAA compliant. It's not HIPAA controlled data, but it's the stuff that makes you special. And it's infinitely accessible by everyone, including your competitor. So I always say it's like, if you wouldn't feel comfortable putting on a billboard outside your competitor's headquarters, you probably don't want to put it into these even enterprise. GPT, Claude, yada, yada, yada. Like, choose a provider that one doesn't lock you in because the important thing there is they're not monetizing your data in the same way that big tech is. And then two, making sure that they have appropriate legal and technical controls in place. And so there are typically a few, like in the controls, and they're like one of the big risks is we already talked about access and things. But also too in your T's and C's, just your traditional legal agreements. I love Claude. They're like, yeah, we keep it private. And then in the enterprise EULA, you'll be like, unless we flag it for misuse. And you're like, so you're monitoring and you're flagging it, you're still tagging it.
Of course. Of course
And
they are.
it just makes me think about Google's incognito mode. You're just like, oh yeah, of course we are. Like, why wouldn't we? So it's like, oh guys, come on. So anyway, those are, I think, are the big risks. And then, of course, infinitely accessible data.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And Sam, how can we, one of the use cases I've been, really thinking a lot about is training acceleration. What are some good ways that we can use AI to assist training folks, whether it's in the healthcare field or defense or elsewhere? What are some great ways we can use that?
But I think vision is really cool because one, you can also have things that respond to scenarios in very different ways. So if like you're in an augmented reality setup, one, you just have more powerful processing. You can do a lot more stuff. So if you're in augmented reality, you can do different types of training. I think at the most basic level, just like choose your own adventure, you know? But right, that was always the sad part. It's like you only had so many combinations in those little books. And I put together a test case. It was for, again, it was another hospital, and it was for training junior residents for like a complex case. Like the answer, the analysis at the end is like they should come to is like, hey, the patient was ex like had like gallbladder stones, you know, but it went through all the diagnostics. And then it was like, well, now you can ask it questions or put in XYZ. So it did two things. One, it gave the resident, they could offload that part of their brain, they turn into an editor. Or they just have something done to do training, just like him right away. So it amplified the clinician to have more time to do other things and do better training. And then on the flip side, if you wanted to, you could also just have do your own adventure. So the junior resident is going through it and, you know, kind of doing their choose their own adventure, getting to see more cases and be have it be adaptive versus traditional training where it's rote, it's prescribed, it's logarithmic, it's left or right.
Absolutely. Now it's fascinating. Something that I read recently, I don't remember where I read it, but somebody was talking about how as these AI systems get more advanced, like people are going to have entirely customizable media, right? So instead of having
Oh,
to
yeah.
watch the show that, Disney puts out or Hulu, Netflix, whatever, you can pull characters from that show and the other show and have them interact and talk to each other. Right. And you can already have these AI engines, write an interaction between your two favorite characters and whatever show you want. But you'll be able to make that visual and be able to make it, you'll be able to turn it into your own TV show where you have, just different characters and people interacting, right? In a way that is just not feasible now unless you want to spend millions of dollars producing one yourself and creating one yourself.
Totally. I mean, I think all the fan fiction listeners here just got really excited, but like absolute nightmare fuel. I don't know. Like, I think it's really cool that we'll be able to do that. I'm curious to see how that'll play out in human brain. I was watching something with my kids and they're, hey Pop, can you pause it? You know, can you pause the show while I go and get something? And in my mind, I was like, no, that's what commercials are for, boys. Like, you have to run, dash, get your stuff, come back. I don't know. It's you're totally right though. It's fascinating to see. You know what I hope though? I hope that what it does is it helps spur more people to get in the market because I think the inverse of that is like with CGI. So it initially drove down cost in film production, but now that CGI is so ubiquitous, in the end, it also drives consumption. I can't remember what it's called, but induced demand is like your classic induced demand curve. So I'll be curious to see where in the production cycle, development production cycle, induced demand is created. And that's what I'm looking for. I'll be curious to see where that pops up because I think that's another great business opportunity.
No, absolutely. And it's funny you mentioned the commercials thing. I realized this. My daughter, she's never seen commercials. Like I cut the cord over a decade ago, right?
Yeah.
Don't I like anytime she watches anything, there are no commercials. And so as a result, like once in a while, I'll go to start a movie on Disney and they'll like do their, hey, these are coming up things soon. She freaks out. She has no idea what it is. She's never experienced commercials and she never knew, and hopefully we never will know, the world where you sit down to watch 60 minutes of TV and 18 of it is commercials, right?
Yeah, it was nuts. It's crazy.
It absolutely was, man. And what are some of one of the things we've talked about is AI strength and how good it is at processing unstructured data. How do you think that's going to impact, whether it's government, cybersecurity, the government, or on the healthcare side, or just in general? How do you think it's going to impact, folks at large?
Like, I think one of the questions just to see, like, gauge how much of it is like when I was doing my management consulting or DoD consulting, it's like, well, how it, figuring out how bad does this person want this? How bad do they want to change? How bad do they want the end result? So I think that's the first question to find out. And then, of course, then it's your infinite panoply of how far this is going to change their life. I think if you want, I think this new batch of organizations that are coming online as Gen AI natives that can build their processes and know about the tools and data, I think you're going to be seeing a lot more companies that are very profitable and very small teams because they can automate so much more. And I wish I could, claim that thought as original, but I was listening to an A16Z podcast, and they're like, yeah, I mean, they're anticipating seeing tons more companies, seven figures plus of revenue with these tiny under 10 people teams just because you can. Because, like, why not?
Absolutely. And so what are some of the biggest opportunities you see in AI over the next couple of years? Yeah, I know we've touched on some of them. What are the ones that you're looking at that you're excited about?
My God, I think some of the things that I'm excited about is your basic extract ETL, your extract transfer load, the most boring of data processing. But in the past, one, it was incredibly expensive and at scale, obviously. And then two, like, dude, what a pain. And half the time you'd have to throw out X amount of data. So it's like having AI engines being able to do this, like, oh, how awesome. I was using it the other day for some government contracts. I was like, hey, here's like 5,000 rows. Here's I used Hather for this, and I was like, here's long range forecast, 5,000 rows, whatever. Here's our capability statement. Find me the ones that are best to worst match, top to down, bottom, and just like boom, boom, boom. So of course ETL, and then of course the next side of that is the processing. But I think ETL, I think I'm really excited about that one. It's boring. Remember I said earlier, boring equals ka-ching. And
Like to your point, the only reason, or one of the main reasons that Warren Buffett's been able to build and grow Berkshire Hathaway into what it is one of the first companies that they invested in and bought into heavily was an insurance company, right? Which gives you a because again, like I can't predict how many accidents you or I are going to get into in our cars over our lifetime. What I can do is tell you how many accidents are going to happen in this country in a year, right? And it also gives you a stay it gives you stable cash flow. It throws off cash every single month, right? And you know how much of that's going to go back out in claims, like, and but it also is super boring. Insurance is super boring. Super boring, Sam. And people make a lot of money doing it, right? Same thing. Like I know somebody that sells, I think she's now selling IP addresses.
Yeah.
Like
100%.
I didn't know that people had to buy them, but people are making money off of them like crazy, right?
God bless. I love that. I love that so much is being democratized. I think that's a new one. It's kind of like, you had the Great Recession, and you had an insane amount of small businesses pop up. And I was like, oh, fascinating. I think this is one of those other seminal moments because you can start doing no code, low code development and have it plug into other places a lot easier. So I'm excited for all the boring stuff that was ignored for years by Silicon Valley because it wasn't sexy, for AI to start touching it because you get a lot more people who can do this work because of AI. You're like, I had to write some Python API code. I mean, I'm like, I'm not over here writing an API. Like, I don't know how to do that, but the machine can, and it can connect up. It worked.
Absolutely, man. I had ChatGPT write a script for me to move files that are co incoming into my Google Drive because they're automatically getting put in there from an integration perspective into
Oh,
a
cool.
specific folder, right? That's something that I would
Yeah.
have to make, and like it doesn't save me a lot of time. It is mainly, but it took me like all of 15 minutes to handle that, right? That's something that I couldn't have done previously, you know?
Totally. Yeah.
And it's really cool. It's fascinating.
Yeah.
So,
Isn't it wild though? But it's like it'll take you 15 minutes, like a week, but then you start adding that up and it's like, wow, okay. And then you compound that over a few other things. You're like, let's say you do it with five other things. So it's 75 minutes a week. Wait, 75 minutes a week times 52 weeks. Ooh, those are some work days right there.
that's over a week of productivity back. Over a week, right? If you're saving yourself like an hour a week, right? You work 52 weeks a week, year, you're getting A whole a little like literal over your a little over a week of your year back from a productivity perspective, right? And
A
so
100%.
all those little things, if you can add up all those little tiny advantages, all of a sudden you're operating at 300% your productivity, right?
Totally.
Which is so cool. It's amazing. And yeah, man, we'll see where it goes from here though. It's fun. But before we, before we wrap up, man, is there anything else that you want to add, Sam? Anything you didn't get to touch on? Anything that I as a host missed asking you?
Man, you killed it. I would love to see. I know we talked about how machine is going to talk. Maybe on a future when we talk about how it's changing how humans to or human to human or human interactions are changing too because of it.
I would love that. I have a lot of thoughts on it. As with everything, I have lots of thoughts and lots of opinions. Love
Those are
it,
the best discussions, absolutely.
man. Sam,
And
thank you so much for coming on, man. This has been a lot of fun.
dude, right back to you, Nick. And thanks for inviting me.
Absolutely. Everybody, thanks for listening to Robots and Red Tape. Hope y'all have a great day.